With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday,
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
And it is another edition of Hoops Adjacent on the Athletic NBA Show. I am David Aldridge in D.C. Pinch hitting today, the best pinch hitter in the business, the Manny Mota. See, y'all too young to remember Manny Mota. Marcus Thompson joins us, man, all the way from the Bay. What's up, sir?
Man, who is the pinch hitter from my era? That's a tough one. Who's a great pinch hitter? I don't know Manny Mota. Come on, can we get somebody from the...
You don't know Manny Mota, Vic Davalio. You don't remember any of these names, right?
Nah, that's just a little pre-Marcus Thompson. I'm more of the... I don't even know who a pinch hitter is. Jeez, this is terrible.
They don't even use pinch hitters like that anymore. Guys don't stay on one squad for... years like Manny Mota was with the Dodgers.
I'm going with Scott Hatterberg, who pinch hit and hit the game winner home run.
Oh, from Moneyball.
As the A's won 20 in a row. There you go. I was at that game.
Were you at? You weren't at that.
I was.
You
weren't at that game. Yep, I was covering it.
Were you really? Yep. Oh wow. How about that from Moneyball? That was a great scene. I love that scene.
Yeah, it was. That was incredible.
It was as crazy as it made it seem in the movie.
It was way crazier live. It was insane. It was surreal. I don't know what the heyday of A's baseball was like. I was just a kid listening to it on the radio.
Yeah.
But man, for a team that didn't make it to the ALCS, it was incredible. Right. It was just insane how good it was.
It was amazing. 20 in a row. That's, you know, literally breaking records. I mean, that just seemed like I remember it. I'm not gonna say I remember it like strongly, but I do remember when they won 20 in a row. It was like, wow, the Oakland A's? You know,
they blew the lead. They had a 5-run lead and blew it, and then won it at the end. That's when they were winning like every game in the bottom of the ninth. It was crazy. Right. We're getting that back as soon as the A's stadium come alive in 2029.
As soon as the new stadium is built in 3031.
Facts.
It's any minute now. They'll get a new stadium. But people want the A's to stay, right? They don't want the A's to leave.
Nah, everybody wants the A's to stay. Especially since it's the last team left, you know? It's like you gotta hang on, right? You gotta keep something. At least that's how I feel. Keep one of them things.
So look, I want to talk about a couple of things. We got Kenny the Jet Smith coming on later from my former TNT colleague. Well, he's still at TNT. I am not, but he's still there. But we were together for 14 years, and it was great time there. Is Kenny as cool as he seems?
Kenny seems like a cool dude, man. I've only met him a couple
Kenny's
times.
He's a very cool dude. Yeah. Very chill dude. Has the best parties that I've ever seen at All Star.
I've never been able to get in one. That's the difference between our careers, listeners. DA is a regular at the Kenny Smith party. I've never been there.
Dude, they tell us from jump, do not ask us for extra tickets. There are none. If you lose your ticket, we can't give you an extra one. That's how hot the ticket is. You know, it's just... it's ridiculous.
I got laughed at trying my first couple times, DA. I was like, hey, you got a ticket to the Kenny Smith party? Look at this guy. He wants a ticket.
People would get angry at me. And this is why I hate All-Star Marcus, because it would be randoms. It would be randos. It would not be like my close personal friends. Who I would really try hard for to get a ticket to see if I could find. Like I would make multiple calls and texts and things. But you have to do that for your friends. I understand that. So your friends say, hey, I need to, come on now. And so you do what you can. Sometimes you can get one and sometimes you can't. But there are random people that I have almost no relationship with would be like, yo, man, can I get three? Can I get five?
Can I get three?
For the Kenny Smith
party. Oh, those people.
I'd be like, no, I can't get you five. And they get mad at me. And I'm like, why are you like angry with me? Random person that I have no relationship with. I can't get you into the Kenny Smith party.
That's crazy.
there's like 700 other parties you can get into.
The worst part about those people is when they're asking, they usually start with that like kind of that very transparent, hey, how you doing intro. Like, you ain't heard from me in a while, but let me do the check-in first to make sure I'm not just asking for something. It's like, dude, go ahead and ask. I'll see what you did. Cut it out.
Right, exactly. But, oh, man, it was just, it's one of the many reasons I hate All-Star. So I was glad I wasn't there this year for multiple reasons, but that's one of them. So you wrote this great column, just a terrific column about LeBron and Steph. I mean, not that they had beef, but they both were trying to – it's competitive. They both want to win championships, so you can't be friends with those people. I understand. It's like Magic and Isaiah were friends at one point, and then when Isaiah's team wanted that chip, they couldn't be friends for a few years, and I understood that. But I thought it was really well written, and I just wonder, did you get any sense from either of their camps that was the case, that they were kind of warming towards each other, or was it – more observational, just kind of knowing those two guys?
Well, it actually began a couple of years ago. So this was like almost like not a culmination, but like the public offering, right? When they did, they're the first time the NBA had the top two vote getters draft the All-Stars, it was Steph and LeBron. And so at that time, I think it was 2018, they had the conversation. They were drafted. They had a lot of fun on the phone, and the conversations was, "Hey, that was great, right?" It's like we didn't know. They didn't know how it would be. It was like, okay, this is going to be awkward, and it turned out to be great. So, from that sense, especially from the Warrior side of the camp, it was like, "Hey, look at this." Right, there's a daylight there. There's something there that the beef or the friction or the competitive spirit is over. I don't think them two ever had an issue. Like, they never had like a problem between those two in particular. But, you know, just how the thing worked out with the finals, there was definitely a competitive tension there. Just like Chris Paul and Steph, they don't have any personal beef, right? But they're both going for the same thing. Chris Paul is as competitive as it gets. So, for me, this whole situation was almost like a couple years in the making, and they got to the point where they were okay being public about it, right? Like, I think it was like, hey, LeBron's like, look, man, I'm already at the top of the game. I'm not worried about anybody else. Like, let's be celebratory. Plus, you know, what we've been through is enough, man. Like, we don't need – at some point, the petty's got to take a backseat to – humanity and appreciation, at some point, let's put aside like the little silly stuff. And I think they're both older and wiser now, so
well, good. I mean, I was glad to hear that and read that in your column, because, you know, like, I get it, I understand. And sometimes, as you know, the beef is not between the individuals, it's between, you know, people in there.
Yeah, hardly ever is, right?
Right? You know what I mean? Like, it's always somebody in your orbit that, you know, that. But I just remember, especially after Cleveland won in 2016, and you remember, I mean, you were there, you remember what that was like, and the block shot and the sneer and all that sort of thing. And I remember Rich Paul saying, you know, I got a text from a dude in Chicago that said the whole city of Chicago is pulling for Bron. And it was so obvious, like, what the subtext was. And I was like, come on. You know, like, are we really going to do this?
Yeah, no, We did it.
Yeah, we did.
We did it. Absolutely.
And we did do it, you know. And so I'm glad that it was, I mean, if it was ever beef, I'm glad it was squashed. Because, you know, you can, when you're as good as those two guys are, you really should. You really should respect the other people who are as good as you are. You know what I mean? Like
that's
really
the crazy part, right? Like, I mean, they're alone on the echelon. There's not that many people out there. That's a small group, right? And
very small. Smaller than most NBA players think too.
Absolutely, no question. It's like, yo, I mean, even like just you could just say that on talent and production, but even if you add the pressures and the just unique experience of being a face of the league. Like, that's not that,
right.
That's not that many people who know what that feels like and know what that's like, right? And LeBron knows it better than anybody, right? He's felt he's got over a decade in right. this, right?
Yeah.
So I thought it would be like Steph, welcome to the club, man. Like, you made it. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But it was like, hold on. Right. Hold on. it was just different. Right. But you're right. It feels like it would make more sense for them to be like, we're in this, like, it, you know, it's good to be joined by another, but it was kind of the opposite until a couple years ago.
Yeah. The Champions Club, right? I mean, you know, it's hard to win.
It's tough, man.
It's so hard. It's tough.
I mean, look at how good James Harden is, right?
And right. Yes.
Like, this dude is incredible. James Harden is insanely good, and he doesn't have a championship. Mm-hmm. Like, it's hard to win a title.
Yeah.
It's
hard enough just getting to the finals. Like if they don't play, if the Warriors aren't there, I mean, the whole arc of James Harden's life is different. You know, he's probably still in Houston because they probably would have won one or two rings by now. You know what I mean? Like
Chris Paul and the Clippers, right? Think about that.
Yeah. Right. Same thing. Yeah. So the idea that, you know, the ones that make it, I would think, have a special appreciation for the difficulty. And if they see somebody else that made it too, like, I would just think you'd be like, I don't give a damn. You my boy, because you know more than anybody what this is like, what my life is like.
Yes.
Like, you know what, you know what I mean? Like, that's why I always thought they would have some kindred in that sense.
You know what's unique about those two is they have the history. I mean, LeBron was a huge Steph supporter.
Yes, huge. Right. You should mention that. You point that out.
Like, nobody riding. Like, I'm saying this. I know this for a fact because the Warriors were trying to sell us or me. I was talking to the general manager. He's like, just Steph Curry kid. You got to watch the Steph Curry kid. I'm like, this dude is like 220 pounds, right? Like, I'm not buying Steph Curry as the next star, right? And then he goes off in the tournament, right. And general manager's like, I told you. And I'm like, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, he can score, but I don't know. And LeBron is the one I see at the games courtside, right?
Games,
like, yeah.
Right?
So it's like LeBron was on this dude like early. So they have a relationship. There was you know, almost like a big brother, little brother kind of thing with them. So it was interesting that they had this little 4-year period of competing for championships and that spigot got kind of turned off, right? And now it's kind of clear to get turned back on. But there's always been this kind of mutual respect and admiration thing. So even in the Curry side, when it got cold, it was like, oh, I guess that's over, right? I guess that's it.
Right.
So
funny to me. I wonder what will happen if the Warriors get good again.
Yes.
Like, Klay comes back next year and they make a move and they bring in a third person that can really help them and they're back to being the Warriors again and just, you know, killing fools. And now they're in the same conference. I wonder what that will be like.
Especially since, like, Draymond is like team clutch now and all, you know, with.
Right.
He's like, that's LeBron's homie. So it's like there's a lot of intermingling happening between these two camps. So do they go back to the icy cold relationship or that would be interesting. I'm very interested to see how that plays out, especially throwing Warriors Lakers. Right. That's a whole different mix, too.
Exactly. With all that history. I mean, it's not Clippers Warriors. Right. But still, you know, they do have some history.
A little bit. Yeah. The Warriors Lakers history is one of demolishment.
Yes. Marcus, I was there for the Run TMC introduction when Run TMC introed the Warriors for that playoff game.
Yeah.
They came, Run DMC came there and introduced Run TMC, and the Lakers beat them by like 7,000 that game. And Magic afterwards said, you don't dance on the Lakers like that.
You shouldn't have done that.
Oh, Lord.
I know one of the great moments in Warriors history before they blew up and became these champions was like the Sleepy Floyd game, right? 29 in the fourth quarter.
Right.
Nobody ever talks about the fact that all he did was save them from getting swept that series.
Right. They weren't even like a, they were beyond an afterthought. Yes. They were just not even like...
It's like, hey, they're something down 3-0, 29 in the fourth quarter, Sleepy Floyd and Superman. And then they lost the series the next game. It's like, that's what the Warriors were.
Right. So that will be fun if those two actually do kind of duke it out for a couple more years, you know, however long LeBron has to play, because that would be kind of fun. I would enjoy that. And it would be great theater because they are both great players.
All right, let me ask you, DA. I got to ask, because this is the question floating around ever since I wrote that. Is there a universe where you see them playing together?
I mean,
they're going to be like Eddie Murphy in life. Are they going to be both old men on the same team?
Right. I mean,
that's when they'll play together.
Like, it's hard for me to see a scenario where Steph would ask to leave Golden State.
Yeah,
like,
that's
forget the money
part,
or the salaries or all of that. Just Steph saying, I don't want to be a Warrior anymore. I just find that hard to believe. And I can't imagine. I would, you know, I've learned never to say never, Marcus, but it's hard for me to imagine a scenario where LeBron would leave the Lakers for anybody at this stage of his career. Like, no matter who it is, like go back to Miami or finish at home in Cleveland or go play, you know, let's say he wanted to play with Chris Paul somewhere, whether it's Phoenix or somewhere else. I mean, it's hard for me to see, but I'll never say never, but I just don't, the scenarios don't add up. I don't see realistic scenarios for either of them leaving where they are right now.
Yeah, something would have to go really bad in both situations, right? That's the only way.
Right.
It's something like
the Warriors would have to be really like they were last year for like three more years.
Yeah, it'd have to be really bad. And
really bad.
The relationship deteriorate.
You know?
Yeah, it'd just have to,
you know what I mean?
Like, it all falls apart. That's where.
It just all falls apart. You know what I mean? Like, that's the only scenario where I could see Steph he's 33 now, right?
Yeah, so, a few days, yep.
At 35 saying, yeah, I want out. I mean, but it would have to go so south, and I don't think it will.
He's too deep in. He could be one of the few players that play their whole career with one team. You know, stuff like that matters to Steph. So I'm with you. Yeah, I don't see. Plus, if LeBron ends up saying, you know what, I'm over this Lakers situation. Like, is LeBron the type to go play with somebody, like, and go be the number two or three guy? Maybe when he's older, maybe when he's 40. Well, here's how it happens. I'm gonna tell you right now, Dia, here's how it happens. If the Warriors draft Bronny, that's how it happens.
Okay. Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That will make sense. Yes.
Then
I can see that.
Then he's like, I'm
a
Warrior.
That is a scenario.
Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. All right. Well, that was interesting. But read this column that Marcus wrote in The Athletic. It's fantastic about LeBron and Steph kind of hugging it out at All-Star in Atlanta. So we're going to take a quick break here, and then we will bring in the Jet, Kenny the Jet Smith from TNT.
Let's bring DA into the conversation here.
Welcome to Who
Comma Is
Adjacent on The Athletic Podcast Network.
Turned it on and I heard Shaq with the barbs and like the bolts in his bracket. I was transported right back into it. I was like, oh, this is great.
I think I rap better than Shaq.
With David Aldridge.
Oh, he's totally playing. Yes. Yes. And then he got their lungs out in front of everybody on TV.
Michael was not your friend.
It was popping in
there. Rodney Lambert.
So the Chicago and Detroit stuff, that was real.
That was real.
I mean, God forbid we don't have scholarship monies and can't pay for the charters for the water polo in Iowa.
Hoops adjacent.
Welcome to Hoops
Adjacent. 5, 4, we have ignition.
Stay mellow, my friends.
The comma is... And I'm so thrilled right now, everybody, to welcome my friend, my former colleague at Turner for 14 years, but he's been there longer. Kenny the Jet Smith joining us, man. Jet, thank you for jumping in, man. Really appreciate it.
I was saying the inside of DA. What's up, brother? We miss you, brother. We definitely miss you.
Man, I miss you guys so much. I swear to God. Hey, man, look, that inside special, the Inside the NBA documentary that y'all dropped over All-Star Weekend, it was spectacular, man. I mean, I had forgotten how long ago I actually did that. Was, I think, last year at All-Star in Chicago. I know y'all have been sitting on that for a minute because of the pandemic. And I just wonder, I was surprised by several things that I found out. I was wondering if anything surprised you. Was there anything you didn't know about your colleagues that came out in that show?
Boy, I don't know if it was more what I didn't know or what I had forgotten.
Right.
And then, you know, just, you know, seeing the footage, like even like all the times that you were guest on our show, you know what I mean? Like those are popping up and seeing young DA, like young K, like you and I, like 15, 20 years ago, you know what I mean? Like, and then like, you're talking about a trade, like that's, you know, that no one like would say that trade is not even significant or that trade is big now. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It was like 15 years ago. That's the stuff that I forgot. Or even guys like Jalen Rose getting their start on our show. Like, he was in one of the episodes. I'm like, right, Jalen Rose. And now he's on ESPN.
I totally forgot he was on there. You're right.
And
you're
forgot he used to come on the show. And that's where he got his start, on our show. And, you know, probably found his voice on our show. Like, things like that kind of threw me off. And I was like, man, this is pretty cool.
You know, one thing I wanted to talk to you about, Kenny, was and you talk about things that you just have forgotten or that jog your memory. And I remember when I was at ESPN and we were doing the NBA Tonight at the time, it was me and Jason Jackson and Fred Carter. And we would watch your show. We watched you when it was just you and Ernie. And I remember talking to Jackson, Freddie about it, going, this is a damn good show. This is a damn good show. And I had forgotten how good the two of you were, just the two of you. And I just wonder, like, you made a great point during the documentary about how when you got to Inside, it became a great basketball show. And I think that's right. And just remembering what that was like when it was just you and Ernie vibing off of each other.
That was very a good time, because it was a time like you could be a pioneer and you could kind of do things that no one else was doing. You could you try things. And so, obviously, TK, our producer, and Steve Fiorillo, more TK, you know, we used to just try stuff. But I used to always say I wanted to do things that as a player, I'd want to see.
Right.
Like, so I was like, oh man, when I used to watch, you know, I was a big TV guy. I'm a TV buff. Like, if you're talking about from The Odd Couple, The Honeymooners, Sanford and Son, Good Time. Like, I've always watched TV, but I also watched local sports announcers, the Warner Wolfs of the world in New York. Sure. Like, in New York, it was a big deal to be the sports anchor guy.
Right,
so
right.
I used to, and Marv Albert. So I grew up on Marv Albert. On radio, he'd tell a story. So then I'm a rap fan. So Biggie Smalls, Slick Rick, they're storytellers. So I was like, that's what I want to see as a player. And so then that's where Ernie and I were kind of bringing that. And I think that attracted Charles D.A. Like, and he says it, he's like later, you know, why he didn't choose NBC, because he would have made more money at the time at NBC. Right. You know, it was, your network television at that time was much different than cable now. You know, cable, dollars are different. But he's just like, no, you guys have fun. That's why I came here. Yeah. And I just was like, I want to see stuff that we do as a player. And I want to tell a story. And that was it.
Right.
Hey, Kenny, can I jump in? I wanted I got to give you the ultimate props, because, you know, watching this All-Star game, it was really touching as a graduate of Clark Atlanta University. And I will say, you've been big up in HBCUs for a long time and supporting Black colleges for a long time. And I know you're North Carolina, right? I know you, Mr. Carolina Blue. Is there a special place in your heart for HBCUs? Because I could count a number of Clark Atlanta shout-outs, Morehouse shout-outs, and shout-outs to the camera people behind the scenes who went to Black colleges. It feels like you've been a part of that family for a long time.
I think for us, you know, my era of growing up, you know, 80s, 90s, you know, teen, is like I didn't know anybody in Left Rock City that went to, like, St. John's. Like, you know what I mean? I didn't know.
Right.
I lived in Queens. I didn't know anybody who went to St. John's. I didn't know anyone who went to NYU. I didn't know anyone who went to North Carolina. I knew people who went to Howard, Hampton. And they would come back with these stories and, you know, about the frats and the bands. And so that's what we grew up on. Like, it's not really like a far-fetched, you know. It's kind of like street basketball. We didn't know anything but street basketball. So I know all the street ball players. So to us, that was the fabric of what we were. You know, Winston-Salem State, Earl Monroe, like, that's what we knew. We knew, like, Earl of Pearl Monroe at Winston-Salem State was this dude that was, like, the best, that he's Black Jesus. You know what I mean? So, like, we didn't understand anything other than that. And for me, honestly, growing up, I wasn't a college basketball fan. I was a Knicks fan. So I never followed college basketball until I started getting recruited. So I was like, and when I started getting recruited, I was like, okay, I got to pay attention. But I was a Walt Frazier, Earl Monroe fan. I was Winston-Salem State and Earl Monroe. And so I didn't know anything other than that, man.
Yeah. And I know you know your New York basketball, obviously. So when I say the name, when I say Herman Helicopter or I say Joe the Destroyer, I'm sure, I wonder, when did you get to play against those guys? And if you did, what was it like playing against them?
No, see, I was much younger. So okay. When I was much younger than all of those guys. But you know who I was, D.A.?
Yeah.
You know, if I really researched it, and you know how you have all those pictures of Rucker Park and people hanging on the fence? Yeah. I could find me on one of those fences one day.
Okay, got you.
Like, I was that kid. I was an 11-year-old kid, 10-year-old kid, climbing on the fence to watch a game, sneaking in, cutting. We used to bring wire cutters, D.A., to Rucker Park. So you could cut the fence.
Right.
And you could slide through the little hole, because you couldn't get into the park that way.
Yeah,
but at 10 and 11, you could just bring the little wire cutter, cut a little hole in the fence, and you could slide through because you were smaller than everybody else.
Right.
So, yeah, that was me. I was that guy who would just love, you know, basketball. We grew up, there was no, in New York, as the people know, there's no football fields. There's no baseball fields in New York.
Right.
It's just 94 feet. That's the only thing they're going to give you, 94 feet. There's a basketball court on every other block. But there's nothing else. There's a handball court and a basketball court. Those are the only two things you can find in New York City.
Yeah.
So you were Pee Wee Kirkland and them?
Yeah, right. I was going to say, what was the best run you saw?
Oh, man, the best. I always, Pee Wee, you know, I'm actually helping with a documentary, a movie about Pee Wee's life.
Oh,
but,
wow.
And Pee Wee, you know, I've known him my whole, you know, adult life. Not really my youthful life, but I told him this story. I said, I go to a game to go see Pee Wee Kirkland, right? It's up in Harlem, and it's packed. You can't even get in. And D.A., guys, so we get there. You can't even get to the court. So now, you know, there's the wire cutter. That's the wire cutter story. So we cut the wire, and we slide into the park. Now we're in the park, right? And this game has started, and I'm like, who's Pee Wee? Where is he? He's not playing. He's not even in the game, right? And they're like, where is he? And the guy goes, oh, Pee Wee's outside right there on top of the Rolls Royce. He was sitting on top of his Rolls Royce, talking to like three or four women, doing whatever he was doing. I'm only 10 years old. I have no idea.
Listen, my man,
the game is going on. VA, the game is actually playing. He comes in at halftime of the game. No warm up, no stretching out. And scores 40 in the second half.
He was already seen anything. He was on the road.
Was like, you know what? And you know what I said? I said, that's who I want to be. I was like, that's who I want to be. It's like, I had never seen anything like that in my life. No warm up. Just walked into the park, 40 points. Off the top of a Rolls Royce, sitting on top of a Rolls Royce.
That's some Marvin Barnes type shit. You know what I mean? coming in, smoking a cigarette, and just
I was
dropping
like,
40
this,
on
man?
Somebody.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
That's the element I grew up in. And that's when they were like, oh, you got to be part of this movie, Kenny. If you see that much of him, you need to be part of this movie.
So you are a part of the pedigree of the New York point guard, which we all know about, you know, going back 40 years, right? So,
yeah.
You know, you and you know, so many guys. I wouldn't even do a justice naming all of them. Right. Is there one guy that you grew up watching or that you played against that you feel does not get his due?
That made it or didn't make it?
Doesn't matter. They may not have made it. That's even better if they didn't.
I want to hear the one that did make it.
Yeah, exactly.
The one that did make it is what I want to hear.
The one who probably did made it probably was Pearl Washington. He doesn't get his job.
Right.
Right. Yeah, Pearl Washington was like, he was the measuring stick that Mark Jackson, myself, anybody else, you know, measured themselves against in our era. Like,
yeah.
He was a man child. And the one thing I always tell him when Pearl was alive, bless him, I used to tell, I said, Pearl, it came too easy for you. Because if you had to work the way me and Mark had to work, you would have been way better than us. So, because he was 15 years old, and he was the best guard in the city and in the country at 15.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he was just, and so he's like, it's hard. My dad has a saying, it's hard to work hard when you're sleeping in silk robes. And he was sleeping in silk robes for a long time. So, I think that was his downfall, being that great. The one guy that I also, you know, there's two guys, Ernie Myers, you know, that went to North Carolina State.
Right. He's
the first All-American I ever saw.
Yeah.
He was the first high school All-American. He came to me. I saw him. I was a junior. And I was okay. I wasn't even VA. I was at my junior year. I didn't have a scholarship offer.
Jesus.
Right? I have none. No scholarship offer. Right?
Wow.
So I'm going into my senior year, and I run into Ernie Myers, and I'm sitting next to him. And he's got his McDonald's All-American ring on. And he's like, I said, Dag, Ernie, let me see your ring, man. And he pulls his ring off, and he lets me hold it. And I said, how'd you make that? He said, Ken, you can make it. You're a good player. This first guy, like a peer that ever said this to me.
Right.
And I go, what do you mean I could make that? He's like, you know how sometimes you got 15 points, Kenny, and then you're happy? You got to want 20. And then when you got 20, you got to want 25. And when you got 25, you want 30.
Right.
He said, you just got to, and this was a term that wasn't even said then. He said, you just got to be hungry. Like people didn't say that then.
Right.
It's a sound, you know, it's a normal saying, oh, be hungry. No, I had never even heard that term. And he said, you just got to be hungry. And I said, man. So I went from not having one scholarship and in 6 months being first team All-American, just based off that one thought process he told me.
One conversation. That's crazy.
One conversation.
Man, you took that silk robe off, huh, Kenny?
Oh, no, sir. I didn't have a silk robe. I was sleeping in a thorn robe. I had and I was just uncomfortable. And I was like, man, I never thought of it like that. Like, man, you got 15 points. You're happy. You're like, oh, I had a nice little game. He's like, no. That's when you try to get 20. Then when you get 20, you got to get through it. And it just clicked. I said, you just never stop. He said, until that whistle ends, You just keep playing. And I was like, man. He said, that's what I did. And I went from literally averaging 15 points a game, 16 my junior year, to averaging 31 points a game my senior year.
Jesus.
One conversation.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date, first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
You know who gets, they get a lot of credit, but I don't think they get enough. And maybe you could tell me, because he's one of my favorites, is Rod Strickland. I feel like we have these conversations, and he should come up far more often than he does.
Well, you know, he's Kyrie Irving without a jump shot.
Right, right. That's right. That's exactly who he is. That's exactly
It's all he is. Kyrie Irving is imitating Rod Strickland. They're related, you know.
Yeah,
You know, they're cousins. But, you know, and Kyrie's dad played with Rod all the time, you know, and they all grew up in the same time frame. So Kyrie is really, to me, when I watch him, he's Rod Strickland with a three-point shot.
Mm-hmm.
But finishing around the rim, Rod was the best. We used to call Rod the layup king. Every NBA player would be like, the layup king. Mm-hmm. He's a layup king. Like, he finishes better around the basket than any big, you know? And he was a layup king. So, Rod Strickland does not get enough credit.
The fact that Rod didn't make the All-Star team is just criminal. It's just like, like literally he was averaging 20 and 10. What is he supposed to do?
No, but think about this, D.A. The year he didn't make the All-Star game, he made third team All-NBA.
Right.
How did he be one of the top 15 players in basketball?
Right.
But you can't.
That's wild.
But you don't make the All-Star team.
How crazy is that? It doesn't even make sense.
You know, we have been, like I said, we were colleagues for so long, so I never interviewed you, right? You know what I mean? Way.
Exactly.
But I always wanted to ask you, what was Bill Russell like?
Oh. you hit it on the head, D.A. You are hitting it. I'm actually writing a book for the first time in my life.
How about that? That's great.
Yeah, and it happened because of the pandemic. And so just to give you a gist of what it is, the book is about, you know, social justice and all of those things, how it ties into also greatness. Because and so all of the great people that have been in my life that influenced me, I wish I knew all these stories at 20, 25.
Yeah, right.
And instead of having chapter 1, 2, 3, 4, each chapter is named after a great person.
Right.
So I got a Michael Jordan chapter, and I just finished my Bill Russell chapter.
Wow.
Because he was my first coach in the NBA. And, you know, as I was writing, one of the things he did to me, he made me sit next to him on every plane ride, every bus ride, and he used to drive me home after games. So I heard every story you can imagine. Every single story that you can ever imagine, I've heard in 6 months. Wow. Because Bill is a talker. So
yes, he is.
And the reason he's DA, he comes and without giving the whole thing. So I this is how it happened. I walk on a bus my rookie year. I come in, first bus trip. We're going to play Golden State in an exhibition game. So we're driving from Sacramento. He's like, no, young fella, you got to sit next to me. I'm like, coach. Like, I'm going to the back of the bus with the fellas. Is that all right? They play cards. You know what I mean? They're having a good time. He's like, and he stands up. Yeah, and he goes, you want to be a loser, you can sit next to these guys. And he points. He's like, he points at him and he goes, he's a loser, he's a loser, and he's a loser. So where do you want to sit? And he and in front of the whole team. And he goes, where do you want to sit, Kenny?
Oh my God.
And I go, I'm gonna sit next to you, coach. And so he, and you know, his cackle starts, and he just starts laughing.
Right.
And he goes, what would you have said if I said that to you? And I go, coach, I'd have been like, yo, you crazy. I'm not a loser. Why are you pointing me out like that? Mm-hmm. He said, see, that's why I know you're not a loser. None of them said anything.
Right. Right. Oh my God. That's amazing. When is this book coming out? I'll order it immediately.
All you have to do is look up the 1987 Sacramento Kings. And you know what you probably say? Yeah, most of those guys.
those powder blues were, it was not a good era.
Yeah, but that was his test, which I didn't realize, to see if those guys would respond. And since none of them responded, he knew that they were in his mind. He's like, anybody who's worth anything in salt would have stuck up, cussed them out.
Right, right.
No, yeah, no, exactly. What are you talking about? I ain't no loser, coach. You don't even know me. It's your first year. Blah, blah, blah. Right. I would have went off. I would have been like, coach, what are you talking about? And he said, what would you have said? And I said, no, I would have stood up and like, what are you talking about? He said, see, that's the difference. I know it.
Right.
Sit next to me. And so I heard all of the stories of Celtics. I heard the civil rights stories. I heard the stories of, you know, with Malcolm and Martin Luther King. I heard, you know, why he didn't sign autographs. I heard every single story you could have met. Casey Jones, you know, and I got to, you know, talk with Casey. And, like, it was just an unbelievable experience that I didn't know would happen based on that one bus ride. That when if everyone would have said I'm not a loser, he would have probably let me sit in the back.
Right. So I don't want to keep, because I know you got to run, but I did want to ask you about, you know, last summer you were very, very much, you know, involved in the Black Lives Matter discussions and, you know, after the shooting in Wisconsin, you famously said, I can't do this show tonight. And I was just so struck by the rawness of that show and of your feelings and your emotions that night. And I just wonder, like, did it surprise you that it welled up in you to the point where you just felt like you couldn't contribute to doing a basketball show that night? Or was it just something that you just kind of flowed with and just said, all right, I'm gonna ride this wave out. And if it takes me off the set, it takes me off the set.
Yeah. It wasn't planned. I just kept walking into the studio, DA, and I was like, I walked in the gate. You know, you've been to Turner, obviously.
Sure, sure.
So, you know, when you drive up, the security guard opens the gate, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, hey, Kenny, how you doing? This was that day.
Yeah.
I walk in, and you know how they greet the talent outside. They make something so you can get into the door. Hey, Kenny, how you doing? Going to producers, everybody. Hey, I was like, no, today's not the same. Why is this? Nah, the day's not the same. And that made me uneasy that everybody was acting like it was the same.
Yeah.
And, or had, not even acting. They were doing their job.
Right.
Like it was the same. And I just felt that today had to be different. And I just felt that if I was going to be on and talking about it, it wouldn't serve it justice. I had to join the march. So I joined the march. I was like, no, I'm part of the march today. I'm not going to be sitting giving my opinion and look like I'm smarter than. No, I'm going to be one of the people in the front of the line with my hand up, my fist in the air, and they're going to be going, I'm not here today because I think this is wrong.
Yeah.
And that was the whole thing. And it happened as Ernie was talking. I didn't even think about it until I was like, I felt uneasy. But as Ernie started to go through, hey, we're back, huh? Welcome back to Inside the NBA. I was like, no, everything's the same. This is not right. This ain't right.
And that made me
walk off.
Yeah. I mean, that I just had so much. It was so powerful because we've all been in that position. You know, yes. if you're a journalist of any kind, you have been in a position where you'd rather be in the march than cover the march. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
We've all been there. Like,
right. You know what I mean? Exactly. But we never could do it, and you never could express how. You can't sometimes. And I thought about it. I'm like, no, just get up and join. You're gonna have a bigger voice by not being here than being here. Saying what you're gonna say is just gonna fall into the millions of people talking. But when I watch Malcolm Brogdon out there with his megahorn, and I see Jaylen Brown, and I see you know all those other players, I'm like, I remember that. I don't even know what they said.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't even know what they. They were there, and that's what I wanted. I was like, no, I got to be part of this, man.
Yeah,
Kenny, you have always been one of the, I guess, quote unquote, old school players who were in touch with the current players, right? You've never been one to bash the current generation like that. I wonder how much fit to you has it been that your career kind of where it was touching the old school era, right? You got coached by Bill Russell, you were with some of the OGs, but you still got to be part of the new kind of Jordan modern era. How much do you think you benefited from being connected to kind of both ends of the spectrum where your career fell?
Well, I always realized that your salary didn't dictate how good you were. You know what I mean? Like, I never looked at person like a player and evaluated them on their salary, because that's just supply and demand, you know? So I was an econ major at North Carolina, econ industrial relations. So I knew that it's all about supply and demand. Oh. The demand goes up, the supply goes down. Okay, right. You're gonna get a better. You're gonna get more money. So that's really what these players are benefiting on. These guys aren't maybe worth $40-50 million in the 90s because it's a different supply and demand. So I never evaluate players based off that, and I think they respect the fact that I just evaluate them as players. I'm like, no, he's the eighth man on the team, but he should be starting, in my opinion. He runs back on defense. He doesn't. But I never question, like, their heart, their passion. Like, because I hear people say, oh, he has no passion. He has no – you can't measure that. But, D.A., I could go to the big board and say, your ass ain't running back on defense. Right. Here it is. Right. Here it is. Here it is. Bing. And that's where I think I live. I live on that big board. I live on that, you know, that moment of, like, explaining the game. So not only my grandmother, Hubie Brown, you know, D.A., everybody gets it. You know what I mean? Right. Like, everybody gets it. Like, okay, it's pretty plain. He's painting the picture. They say a picture's worth 1,000 words. Well, a video's worth 10,000.
Tape don't lie.
Yeah, the tape don't lie.
Well, look, Kenny, man, dude, I swear to God, we could do this for an hour, but I know you don't have an hour. So, man, thank you for joining us, man. This was unbelievably good stuff, man. I really appreciate it, man. The best of luck to you. Safe travels to you and the fam, man. And hopefully, you know, at some point we can all be in an arena together again and chop it up again, man. I miss you guys terribly, and you guys were great to me when I was there. And I hope everything continues to be good for you. And good luck with the book, by the way.
Man, appreciate it, man. And they always say, you know, people don't get their flowers. Well, I'm going to give you yours, D.A., because as a player and as an analyst, everyone has always respected how you went about your craft. Because, you know, people kind of dig for – there's some investigative reporters that dig for dirt.
Right.
But then there's investigative reporters that dig for the truth. And you've always dug for the truth. And if it has some dirt on it, that's your fault. You know what I mean? I think everyone respected the fact that you dig for the truth and you didn't. I've had a reporter – you said we got to go, but I'm going to stay a couple extra minutes because I've had a reporter ask me one time when I was a player, D.A., and this is where I was like, I actually said this about you and you don't even know it. I said, D.A. would never have done stuff like that. We were talking about when we were playing and you were still at Turner. And I was like, that's the difference between, and that's when I started joking, calling you the insider all the time, because I'm like, he gets the information. I'm on the phone and I got traded, and the reporter goes, hey, yeah, I heard that, you know, you got traded because of, you know, there was a possible drug use. And I was like, what? I was like, what? I don't drink alcohol. I never drank alcohol until I was 36. The first time I had a drink was I was 36 years old, right? So I'm like, no, I was like, I don't drink. I don't even drink. Mm-hmm. He's like, no, I'm just joking. I just want to see if that was it. I'm like, what? I was like, that then to me, he just made something up on the spot to see if he could find dirt instead of like digging for the truth.
Right.
Yeah. And that's just, the difference.
That's, yeah. I can't, sometimes I don't even believe I'm in the same business with some people.
You know, like, so we appreciate you.
Ain't that the truth?
You know, yeah, Marcus, man. Right? You know, like, no we doubt. Know, believe me, Kenny, we know too.
Oh,
we shake our head and go, how are you in this business with us?
There you go, man. Well, I'm giving you your flowers for always digging
man,
for
I appreciate
the truth
it.
And not
man,
digging for the
it.
Dirt. No doubt.
Kenny, I appreciate it, man. And we'll see each other soon, man. Take care. And best of the, best of the kids and everything, man.
All right. Thanks a lot, brother.
Have
all
a
right.
good one, appreciate Kenny. Thanks a lot.
Man, Marcus, let me tell you something, man. I've said this many times. You know, when I went to Turner, I was in a not good place. You know, I was not in a good place because ESPN had just let me go. And, you know, I had never been fired from anything before, you know, and I did not know what to do with myself because, you know, I was 31, 32, wherever I was at the time. And had never, like I said, well, shit, I was 39. I was closer to 40. Never not had success in my work life before ever. You know, everything I did worked. And Kenny and Charles and Ernie and Tim Kiley and everybody at Turner, they could not have done more to make me feel at home and make me feel like he just, you know, he was very complimentary. Like, just do what you do. We don't want you to, you don't do what we do, do what you do. And you'll help us, you'll help the show be better. And it was so empowering to just do what I do. You know, like I didn't have to try to be a carnival barker. You know what I mean? Just, and it made, it made me relax and made me feel like, okay, I can just do what I do and they'll appreciate it. And so I can't thank those guys enough for them reaching out to me when I needed it in my career.
You know, that might sound like it's crazy, but man, that don't happen for everybody. Trust me.
No, it does not. I know. Yeah. So let's wrap up with these questions, Marcus. We ask people to send in not stupid questions every week to Athletic NBA Show on Twitter. And we got a few that are not bad. So we will read them. They're not stupid.
One day, DA, you got to take only stupid questions. Like,
you know, like bizarro mailbag, right? And just do the opposite.
Yeah.
Brian Leachy, I hope I'm saying that correctly, right, asks, as the pandemic lifts and journalists and fans are allowed back into arenas, do you think that media will be allowed back in the locker rooms, or is that something that will stick? Brian, they never have us in the locker room again. I'm convinced of that.
It's done.
It's over. It's a wrap.
It's done, buddy.
We will never be in NBA locker rooms again. I will be shocked if we are ever allowed in NBA locker rooms again. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think so.
So here's the only thing I'm trying to figure out how they're going to do. Number one, right? You can't do 15 Zoom interviews at night.
Right.
Like, it's just too late.
Yes.
So I'm telling you right now, if you're listening, Raymond Ritter, I'm saying I want the dude you don't have on Zoom, period. I don't care who it is. We got eight guys on Zoom. You're like, okay, I want that guy, the guy who's not on Zoom. I need to go in the locker room to talk to him.
Right.
Because they're going to try to pull this fast one on us. Right. You know, it's going to happen. And I'm not going to let this happen because I think the players want us in there. Not all the time. Right.
Not all the time.
But I think they do want us in there. I think they do like having conversations with the media that they want to talk to and not the open forum where everybody can hop on. Like, I think they prefer it.
I hope you're right. I would not want to know the percentages. I think there is probably a percentage.
Yeah, you probably don't want to know that, huh?
Yeah, right? There's probably a percentage. Like, you got mature guys on your team. You know, Steph's mature about the media.
Yeah, I got grown folks. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Draymond likes the media, even though he says he doesn't. He actually likes talking to us about different things. I think different teams would handle it differently. But I see your point. I mean, I hope that we're allowed back in. My guess is we won't be, but we'll see. We'll see. Okay, Zamunda Ray asked, should the Bulls trade Zach LaVine to a contender or build around him and young Pat, a.k.a. the Paw? Not the Claw, but the Paw. I like that. No, if I'm the Bulls, I would not trade Zach LaVine. I mean, they've been waiting forever. I shouldn't say forever. A long time for somebody to have kind of the breakout season that he's had. This is, you know, not since early pre-injury Derrick Rose if they had somebody this kind of prolific on offense to me. So I wouldn't, unless he says I will not resign here. I would try to build around him and Patrick Williams. I mean, I would for sure.
I don't know. What do you get out of trading him? But back to where you just came from, like, nah, this dude's about to lead you to the playoffs. Right. And he's, what is he making? I don't even think he's making 20 million. It's not ridiculous. It's not like 50 or 40. So
Zach
Zach LaVine.
No, Zach's in the 20s. He's in the high 20s.
Is he in the high 20s? I don't know. You know,
yeah,
that
it's
high.
Not,
okay,
it's
maybe
not ridiculous, though.
I don't think he makes an amount that exceeds what he had, what he's worth.
Right.
Yeah. So I think, no, he signed 4 for $78 million. So yeah, a little bit less than 20. So, I mean, okay, he's going to get a new deal. He's going to get paid. But I think Zach LaVine has finally arrived. Like, why would you get rid of him now? That to me, that's the odd part. Like, yeah, he's good and he'll be affordable.
Yeah. No, and he is, and his career highs in like 7 different categories. Like, everything is a career high this year for him. And some of that will regress, I understand, but it's still, look, he's proven himself to be, you know, an all NBA level player. So, yeah, no, I wouldn't get, it's the same thing with Beal. Like, why would you get, you're never getting anybody as good as the guy you have. So why would you trade
never,
him? Like,
never.
It doesn't make any sense.
I mean, you trade, you know, Bradley Beal out of like sympathy and to do right in the world. Right. Because right. It's like, yo, we'd never go put a team around you. Like, what are we doing? But now, the smart move would be to put a team around him. Like,
right.
That's the easy move.
Right. Yeah. Now I get, I've advocated that the Wizards trade Beal, but I advocated that a year ago.
I know you did.
Bleakest.
I remember reading that.
I did. Oh yeah. Yeah. And I still kind of think they should, but I understand them not wanting to now. You know what I mean? Like, they're winning, and so I get it. You know, you don't want to get rid of it. All right, let's wrap it up with Orla Ortiz six says, what is a realistic trade market for Thaddeus Young? A first or a low level lottery pick? You ain't getting a lottery pick for Thad Young. Now you can just forget that. That's not happening.
You talking about 49-year-old Thaddeus Young?
Yeah.
He's having a good season. No, he's good. He's still good, but he feel like he's been in the league for 20 years.
He's having a good season, but I'm not.
Didn't
I'm
he
not
play with
no
Jared Jack
at
Georgia Tech? Like, geez.
Were they on the same team? I got to go look them up.
I wouldn't be surprised if they were.
He came out. Well, no, he was in the Joakim Noah draft and the with the Al Horford draft. I guess that would be right. So that was 2008, 2009, maybe. I would have to look.
Yeah, he might be. He might be.
That was before that because I was still in Philly. Yeah. So it was like 2006. So yeah, I mean, he's not a kid, but and he's like I said, he's played well for Chicago this year, and I could understand them wanting to maybe flip him for an asset. But it's not going to be a lottery pick. I mean, like I said, maybe if a team has multiple first, they might give you one. Miami, I think, would be a good spot for him. He could help them, you know, second unit guy that can defend and is very unorthodox, hard to guard because he's left-handed and still has enough hops to kind of make it worth your while. But yeah, I don't see it. I don't see like a huge market for him, but there would be a trade market for him for sure for a contending.
No
league.
Question.
Absolutely.
No question. If there's a team that just needs a piece,
yeah,
you know, team like Denver, right? Like, we need a guy who can stop some guys, right?
Yeah.
Come
right.
in. Like, you know, right. he'd right. be a good last edition piece to see how you go. I don't know, like you said, second round pick. Maybe late first, a team like Denver who's going to finish at the bottom of the first round, maybe. Yeah. But you're definitely not getting a lottery
pick.
That's
right. That's right. That's what I'm saying. Late first in the 20s. Yes. Yeah, I could
see that. He's good, though.
I could see that.
He's good, though. He can help some teams.
No, he is good. He's a good player. He sure can. He sure can. So good, not stupid questions this week. Keep them coming, Athletic NBA Show. And thank you all for joining us. Please make sure you leave that 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you are listening to this fine American podcast. And we will see you next week. Later.
Because, you know, people kind of dig for there's some investigative reporters that dig for dirt. But then there's investigative reporters.